JT live in Vegas.
From the Las Vegas Strip right to our studios on Flamingo.
Woohoo!
I'm here because I got to put two kids through college.
LeBron.
We ask everybody to participate, from Uber drivers to taxi drivers to bartenders. I mean, I never slow down. I stand up in the studio. I'm excited to be on the radio. I like energetic callers who have opinions. Sound off like you got a pair.
Woohoo!
Oh, I'm cranky Yankee. How do the Yankees lose a game like this? Are you kidding me?
And now, live from Las Vegas, here's JT the Brick.
Good to be back, JT. Bobby running the show. Brought to you by Golden Entertainment, PTs, PTs, Sierra Gold. You've been to the stratosphere. Look at it again. We love kicking off the monologue with all our friends at Golden Entertainment. Big weekend in sports of what could have been. Man, that could have been one of the most epic, epic moments in golf history, or at least the last 5 to 10, 15 years if Tiger would have came back, had the lead on the back nine, and doesn't win the Open Championship. Huge. We'll get into that. There's a lot of things happening here. As we get to baseball, Seth Everett's going to join us, Baseball Insider, now with Forbes. Got a really good platform there to talk about the second half of baseball as it's underway, the deals that have gone down from Machado to the Dodgers, what other teams are expecting to do to increase the productivity in the lineup or get someone in middle relief. We'll talk to him. Our great friend, Mike Pritchard, the great wide receiver, the Buffalo, the man who had the great career in the NFL and on the radio here in Vegas. Pritch will join us here at about 20, 30 after. We'll get to Pritch at some point near the bottom of the hour and talk to him. And Scott Baer, the number one insider covering the Raiders up north for NBC Sports Bay Area, on a lot that's happening going into the Raiders. Napa, I'll be up there Thursday and Friday broadcasting from Raiders training camp as the John Gruden era is back underway again. So big weekend. Heading to the weekend up in Napa, but Thursday, Friday shows a lot of Raider talk going into the weekend and coming out of Napa before the preseason begins. But I'll lead with what happened at the Open Championship. This is a golf town, and imagine this. Tiger Woods had a chance to come from behind. On the turn, he takes the lead at the British Open, and he's lights out at this point in time. He's going tee to green. He's putting well. Everything is working well for Tiger. Then Tiger goes on the back nine, has an incredible bunker shot that saves a par to get the back nine going, and then a double bogey and a bogey for Tiger took him out of the tournament as he went par down the stretch. When do you recall a golfer of this name and magnitude being that close to having the win on the back nine and only having two bad holes? They weren't the end of the world. They weren't Vanderveld holes. They were just a double bogey and a bogey. Took him out of contention as the guy he's playing the tournament with him is steady as a rock in Molinari, playing with Tiger, by the way, with the Tiger crowds mixed in, and he has the round of his life. When Tiger took the lead, I thought that this could be the biggest story of this entire year.
On nine, thanks, Matt. Tiger Woods, can he save par? The huge scoreboard on the far side, right at the top, and I wonder how many of these thousands of people watching ever thought they would see the name Tiger Woods right at the very top in an Open Championship again. Well, here he is, the great Tiger Woods. But he's got a five and a half footer to save par after coming out of the bunker, greenside on the right. I'm always amazed at how quiet everything becomes when a player is putting. Tiger rolls this forward and in. There's a great certainty.
I apologize for the length of that cut. I didn't need the whole backstory in the book read to me on the back nine there, but you get the point. Tiger was surging at that point in time. He ends up losing it. Was that more about Tiger losing the Open Championship or Molinari winning it? That could be the simplest golf question anybody could ever ask you, because some people think that Tiger played so well to get himself to lead that we shouldn't tear him back down for not winning. But if you're going to be in the rare air of Tiger Woods along with Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer and all the legends to ever play this game, like Tom Watson at the British Open, with the lead already with 14 majors, Tiger's got to win that. It was set up okay. he went 3-iron, 3-iron off the tee when they build clubs like 5-woods, 3-woods, hybrids, and he decided to go 3-iron, 3-iron off the tee, pulled one, pushed the other, and lost the tournament. Not because he hit it over the bunkers with his driver and it went into the burn. Not because he hit it almost out of bounds with his driver. Because he tried to go down to a 3-iron, and the 3-iron imploded him. Double bogey, bogey. He loses the Open Championship. That was tough. He talked about it afterwards, the mistakes that he made. I thought the mistakes were just teeing off with the 3-iron on two holes.
Well, I made a few mistakes there. I drove in the rough with, you know, 2 3-irons there at 11 and 12. The grass grabbed the shaft on both of them, and you know, I made a couple mistakes, on 11 around the green.
I watched the whole thing, and the thing that bumps me out about Tiger not winning was the fact that he got beat in a level of his game historically that he doesn't get beat at. He doesn't play 3-iron off the tee and get beat. He's Tiger Woods. He's got 14 majors. He had the lead on Sunday, and his iron play let him down, not in the fairway, off the tee. Shocking to me. I think the biggest piece of irony the entire broadcast is they had a split screen commercial. They had a lot of commercials. Fans were going crazy, upset about it. But there was a commercial for Tiger as he was he was blowing up at that point. He was having a bad couple of holes. And one of the other side said M3, M4. It was a television commercial for his driver. And I stopped it and hit pause and said, the irony of the meltdown happening while the split-screen commercial is for Tiger's brand of drivers, and he wouldn't take out driver. For Molinari, give him all the credit in the world. He was great, consistent. He didn't have to go down deep and go low. He didn't have to shoot a 65. He did everything right to win.
Francesco Molinari has this putt to go out on his own at the top of the leaderboard on the 147th Open Championship here at Carnoustie. This could be a putt to win the Open. But from round about 7 feet, rolls it forward, and in it goes. Listen to that roar. And a punch of the air from Francesco Molinari. Hugs his caddy. What a performance. What a performance. 8 under par.
An incredible moment. Turin, Italy, to be the first to win, the first Italian to win the Open Championship, his first major, to be able to pull this off. Legendary moment, and I hope I'm not making too big of a deal out of this, but he played against Tiger in that group and ended up winning. How often does that happen, especially when we're thinking it's going to be Rory McIlroy, it was going to be Jordan Spieth, and how about Jordan Spieth, who had the lead, blew the lead, got the lead back, at least tied for the lead, and played his worst of the four rounds at the Open Championship on Sunday, where he could have won another major, and had those four at the age of 25 to have that milestone. And he played really poorly down the stretch. Really surprised by that, too, because he was locked in for several rounds, and he could have came away with the Claret Jug, and I think that would have been huge for his legacy there. He'll get other chances again, but that was tough to watch. No one played great other than Molinari, who played at a high level enough to win. We'll talk about that at 876-1340. Hit me up on Twitter, at JT the Brick. We're also on Facebook, also at JT the Brick. So golf was a big part of my weekend, watching most of this. I watched boxing. I'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. The Raiders made a broadcast change with Greg Papa, my longtime friend, still friend, longtime friend. We go back, and a great play-by-play voice that affects Vegas, Brent Musburger. You know his legendary name. We'll talk about that with Scott Baer coming up a little bit later on in the show in about a half hour. Seth Everett, kind enough to join me, the great baseball insider, now at Forbes. And wanted to have you on again, my friend, to set up the second half, because you know I like teams that do deals around the All-Star break. Did you see enough deals this offseason?
Look, you know, my concerns about baseball, I'm not just with Forbes. I have a lot of other things going on. But, my ideas about the trade deadline are, if there are as many bad teams as there are, why are there not more pitchers on the market? You know, like, why isn't Madison Bumgarner on the market? I think that's a perfect pitcher to get dealt. And if people are saying, well, the Giants are on a resurgence, that's fine. They still have Zamarja. They still have Cueto. Get a boatload for Bumgarner and make a trade that helps your baseball team. I'm not talking about giving them away to save some cash. The Mets situation to me is different in that Jacob DeGrom is a big piece. The problem is they don't have a Johnny Cueto or a Jeff Samardzija. They have a bunch of guys who don't understand anything. Steven Matz and Syndergaard, who, by the way, hates me. And all those things, you know, going on, if you could, you know, have faith that any of those players would turn into stars, you'd trade DeGrom. But what's keeping the Giants from holding on from trading Madison Bumgarner?
I got to stop you for a second, Seth. There's so many Giant fans out here and out west listening, and because Bumgarner is a statue guy. I'm talking about getting Fleury a statue, and he didn't win the Cup, but he's a great goalie. He's played 1 year at T-Mobile. Bumgarner is part of the modern new resurgence of that entire organization. It's tough just to get rid of him for decent value or prospects. He's the heart and soul of the roster.
Look, I get it. I'm not talking about giving him away.
Right.
But you remember, Brian Cashman's best job as general manager was the year that he traded Andrew Miller. And he traded Aroldis Chapman. And he reset that franchise to go win a pennant. I'm talking about that kind of trade. Take these teams with these giant farm systems, right? Take a Yankees. Take a Milwaukee Brewers. Take these teams with a giant farm system and take all their loot. Steal them. I'm not talking about selling because they're not sellers. Sellers are the Marlins, okay? Sellers are the Orioles. The Orioles are begging people to take Dylan Bundy or Kevin Gausman. Okay, go get them.
Seth Everett.
This is, to me, a bigger thing. Like, try to get a blockbuster here.
Seth Everett's our guest. A couple other quick things on this deadline. I look at Machado moving. I like him, and I look at him the same way as I look at Kawhi. I think he's a great offensive, productive guy, but a great defensive guy in a league where there's a lot of wizards and guys with good gloves, but he's in the middle of the lineup and plays great defense. I want to see more deals like that. Are the Red Sox secure with everything they have in their dominance that they don't have to make a big move at all with the lineup or anything to do with the setup guy?
You know, it's a great question because, you know, on paper you would say yes. But they are a team that has a legitimate threat from Arizona. They are a legitimate in a position where they were the prohibitive favorite to win their division. And I think they have a challenge. I think they have a fight on their hands. Would I like another reliever? That would be a good team. I would put Zach Britton on that team.
Yeah.
On that Dodger team, that fits me, you know. Like that I'd buy. The argument about whether or not we're talking about a circumstance for the Dodgers, like there's not a question of whether or not they have enough. They're on paper the best team in their division, but you know as well as anybody, you don't win pennants on paper.
No doubt about it. We're wrapping it up with Seth Everett. I wanted to get your whole look from Home Run Derby through the All-Star game. What was your big takeaway? You know, give me everything, if you can condense it down to what blew you away off the field as an off-topic that wasn't involved with the game, and then the execution of the game and the all-time record for 10 home runs in an All-Star game, and you're in the building for that.
But it's not only that. It was 10 home runs, but it was only one sack fly. Like, there was no baseball being played. I tweeted that during the game. Which night was the Home Run Derby? I thought... The two amazing things that I thought was, number one, the last two All-Star games have been a perfect microcosm of the crisis facing baseball. And I have 9 podcasts that I'm working on posting today with All-Stars. I got Kimbrel. I got Corey Kluber and Christian Yelich. Like, I had a lot of players. I was amazed. When I walked up to every player, they were talking about strikeouts. They were talking about the shift. They were talking about the attendance. Like, it wasn't just me. This is not my personal crusade.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that's a theme. And I was amazed by how many times that was brought up.
Just reset for the second half. Any of the favorites you'd like to take down in the pennant races? Any comeback that you see in the making starting right now?
Well, I wouldn't give up on Washington. You know, I heard an interesting thing on social media today about Gio Gonzalez, who's going to be a free agent. I think these next 10 days are going to be key. Right now, they're 6 back. 6 back with 2 months and change to play, I think is a doable thing. I don't think Atlanta or Philadelphia have the experience and the veteran leadership to guarantee me a division title. So I think the Nationals will be heard from. As far as the National League is, the two other prohibitive favorites, the Dodgers and the Cubs, will probably win. I'd love to see what Milwaukee does. Milwaukee's a team. They were in first place for much of the first half. They've run into a hiccup. They're playing some bad baseball. They have that controversy now with the reliever and his 17-year-old tweets. The idea that the Brewers could do something, make some kind of thing that shakes it up, get Osdrubal Cabrera, I don't know, something, to do something to challenge the Cubs. They still play them 10 times head-to-head. That will decide the Central.
Seth underscore Everett, great friend of the show, several platforms, and please tell us about the podcast because it's all fresh as always, but coming right off the All-Star break into the second half.
Yes, if you can download on any podcast platform, the podcast is called Sports with Friends, and there's already 150 episodes, but we are putting up 9 separate episodes of Sports with Friends with AL and NL All-Stars that I recorded last week. I was visiting my daughter at camp, so I couldn't post them until today.
That's a camp etiquette. That's the right thing to do. Good to talk to you, bud. Appreciate it.
You got it, my man.
Seth Everett, coming off all the work he did at the All-Star break. And he's a really a champion for what's happening with baseball now, the shift, home runs, strikeouts. That's why he says go listen to that at the podcast. I'm into that, too. I'm a diehard Yankee fan, so I want to watch games every night when they play. I'll watch a little bit of other teams, especially out west, the Dodgers and the Giants, the A's. I pay attention to all of it. But I believe as a baseball fan, unless you're handicapping games and got action on every pitch in certain games, I don't want to watch and dig into 6 innings of baseball unless it's my team and I'm passionate about it. How do they get more of the millennials, more of the younger fans passionate, not just watching it, but getting behind teams again? That's got to pass down from generation to generation. He thinks that there are problems in baseball now. They are changing the rules from replay to the shift to the way we're seeing these new numbers and launch angles and strikeouts. The game is changing right before our eyes. We'll talk to Mike Pritchard coming up. What a great player he was locally in high school. Legend. College. Legend. Great NFL career and a broadcaster for a long time. On what to expect, not only for the Broncos, the AFC West, but what are some of the bigger NFL storylines heading into training camp. We're brought to you by the Henderson Hyundai Superstore. It's Super Boulder Highway, right there in Henderson, where the deals are made.
On 1, 2, 3, or 4, or is it something where this guy likes his quarterback?
Not yet. It's like anything. You can go around a room and probably get 4 or 5 different opinions on how they should be stacked. And
regardless of consensus, he'll be the guy you like. Is that fair?
Yeah. That's my job, right? I got to break the ties.
Yes, John Elway's been good at it as an executive, a legendary player. JT, back with you, a great friend of the show, Mike Pritchard. We talked about his epic run as a high school player, college, as a pro, and now a great radio host. Mike, good to talk to you again. How you been? How's your summer been?
I'm great, JT, man. Summer's going by quickly. It's been great, though. Getting ready for the season. Camp starts this week, man. Can't wait.
Same here. Camp right up there. I'll be up in Napa at the end of the week for the Raiders, and I know all the coverage you're going to give the Broncos there. Hey, quickly, before we start, Tony Sperano, and I'm going to get into that later. I'm going to talk about it at the top of every hour. I got to know him just a little bit from a distance. He was kind to me. You've met a lot of people throughout your career. I don't know how well you knew him or other coaches who passed suddenly or friends of yours from back in the day. Football's a family. This really hit everyone across the NFL.
I really did, JT. You know, I didn't know Coach personally, but I knew people that knew him and certainly have worked with him. But like you mentioned, you know, you play with guys and you hear about them passing. And, you know, you feel like you're just getting old too fast. But then at the same time, you realize that these guys aren't old. You know, we're passing away way too young, and you just got to take care of yourself if you can. But, yeah, just sad news. But you're right, a fraternity, family, however you want to put it, you know, normally guys know somebody that knew somebody that passed away, and it's always sad.
Are you sensing that now individuals are thinking the Chargers are better heading just into this preseason, a regular season, than the Broncos because of the quarterback change, or the Raiders because of the Raiders coaching change and a lot of their changes from within? Are you sensing the love for the Chargers through the Rocky Mountains like we're getting here in Vegas?
JT, I saw USA Today have the Chargers going to the Super Bowl. All teams, the Chargers going to the Super Bowl. So, I think that's the easy, the favorite pick right now. And I don't know if it's going to come to fruition. You know, the L.A. Chargers, I think people were a year early on them last year. I knew that they were going through transition. They were going to a new stadium, new setting. Everything was going to be new. They started off so slow, but then they surged. So you got to give them credit for that. I'll be curious. I'd be curious to find out if they can be front runners, though, because everybody's gunning for the Chargers. I think everybody within the AFC West believes that the Chargers are the team to beat.
Mike Pritchard's our guest. Excuse me, Mike. When I ask you about Kansas City with Pat Mahomes, are you a fan? Do you think he's going to be a great pocket passer?
I don't know if he's going to be a great pocket passer. I think he will make plays. Now, I'm Eric Bieniemy, who's the new offensive coordinator there. He's a good friend of mine. And I think he's going to really try to use five eligibles, meaning Travis Kelce, meaning, you know, all the other weapons that they have, Hill and Sammy Watkins and Hunt and as well as Mahomes. So I think he's going to be a playmaker. I'm not so sure how efficient he's going to be in the pocket, though. He's still a young guy. He's still trying to get used to the league. So I expect a lot of mistakes from him. But at the same time, you just got to be careful because I believe he can hurt you at times.
Mike Pritchard's our guest. Gruden and Carr. I think Gruden's a mastermind. I have so much respect for his offensive vision dating back to the Niners where he started, to Mike Holmgren with Favre and the Packers, Randall Cunningham, to the run with Gannon and turning him into an MVP. I think Carr, coming off the injury and now being healthy for now well over a year, I think Gruden gets a young athlete who's already been explosive. But can the Raiders be explosive with this offense right out of the gate?
You know, I agree with you. The Gruden-Carr matchup or partnership, if you will, it could be good. The problem for me, JT, is when Gruden turns into Chucky. You know, when he gets that look and he actually looks like Chucky, I don't know if Carr has ever encountered that in his life, let alone be able to get along with that on the sideline. I mean, that guy's going to be calling the plays, and certainly if Carr's not executing the plays the right way, he's going to get Chucky. So that's going to be interesting to me. I think Gruden and Carr will have that relationship, and they have explosive players on offense. I believe Gruden's excited about that. But when everything's not going according to plan, and you know, the defense might have their number that day, and Chucky emerges, I don't know if Carr can handle that.
In your years as a player, a great player, and obviously in the Seattle community, what do you sense things going to happen there with Pete Carroll? Is this the beginning? Not of the end, because he's had a brilliant run in Seattle, but is this going to get a little ugly in regards to PR and the players talking and the breakup of the Legion of Boom, even though they have an MVP type of quarterback? What do you sense is going to happen in the 206?
Well, I think they got rid of the ugly in offseason. Mm-hmm. So they're going to avoid that during the season. You know, they had some alpha males that they needed to let go, or else it would deteriorate from within during the season. So I think Seattle's going to struggle. They still have a franchise quarterback, like you mentioned, Russell Wilson, tremendous player, and they're going to rebuild. They already started that with Rashad Penny. They got to start over with the offensive line, and in particular the defense too. But I think they avoid the ugly, because they're changing and they're getting younger players in there, guys with their eyes wide open, not really knowing what to expect. And Carroll should be able to handle that. But I do believe he's on his way out, though. I give it this year, maybe next year, and then Carroll finally hang him up.
I don't want to do a deep dive on this, but on the show that you work on in Denver, are you hearing more anthem, Trump anthem? Is that starting to kick up again, or is it the summertime and we're right about at camp level, ready to start the preseason, or is that something that spikes up all the time in that hotbed of a football community?
Right. You know, it doesn't spike up as much here. I think everybody's eagerly awaiting the start of training camp. I mean, some moves, jobs are on the line, coaches are on hot seats, players, they might retire, might not be here anymore. So 2018, a big year for the Denver Broncos. On top of that, Pat Bowlen might have a chance, a legitimate chance, getting to the Hall of Fame too, the owner of the Denver Broncos. So, you know, the Bowlen family has been stricken with Alzheimer's, not only Pat, but his wife, Annabelle. So, I mean, it's really, really tough times for the Bowlen family. I think the community has appreciated the Pullman family over the years, that they really want to see the Broncos successful. So that's where the focus has been. I think it'll ramp up. The anthem and everything else will probably ramp up once we get into the season, or once we see somebody taking a knee, and that'll be all over the airwaves. So right now, Broncos fans, Broncos country is just waiting for the season to start.
I appreciate you bringing that up about the Bolin family. As you know, football is a family. All the different ownership groups and families. When a family is affected that way, the entire organization, every day going to work, to the facility, it's the backdrop of what the organization is going through off the field. And, yeah, that's a big deal, I would assume, for the entire community up there because of the way that family is beloved.
Yeah, it's a huge deal because, you know, Pat Bowman was a guy that was always seen by the community.
Sure.
You know, he was an owner. He's kind of hands-on, but then, you know, he let the football people take over. But at least you could identify with Mr. Bowman. Same thing with Annabelle. Once Mr. Bowman kind of let loose of control, gave control because of the Alzheimer's to the trust. But now you have the kids. He's got seven kids, and one of the oldest daughters actually made a play for the ownership. For control of the team. So now you have the family drama that's public as well. So, you know, look out. I think fireworks are in store for 2018 for the Denver Broncos, and we'll just have to see how it plays out.
Mike, last one. What's the first thing that comes to your mind? It's exactly 4:30. 108 degrees. Take me back to junior high or high school or growing up here. What you remember when it was 108 at the end of July?
Oh, man, JT, I would love to tell you I got used to it, but you never did, man. I mean, it was painful. You know, the sun actually would hurt. It would literally hurt your body. So not too fond memories of that. We actually had 2-a-days prior to 12 o'clock. We had to do 2 practices prior to noon because you just couldn't practice in the afternoon. I mean, it was insane. But, you know, 108. Right now we're going through, I think, tornadoes. It's crazy right now with the weather out here in Colorado, but 108, I don't miss that too much these days.
Mike, please tell us when you're back in town. Can't wait to see you. All the best. Thank you for today.
Thank you, JT.
There he is, Mike Pritchard. How cool is that? Every 2 to 3 weeks, I tell Bobby if we can and Pritch go on his show or he can come here and just to talk to him. What an impact he's had on this community. What a great guy. Everyone who knows Michael Pritchard in this town. And what a star as a young player. 2-a-days. Even 2-a-days in high school. I mean, we have some power football schools here in the Valley that practice hard, but weather, the heat is so extreme. To imagine that, and you go back to when Pritch played and was a star here, and what he remembers 2-a-days before noon. Incredible. We're going to talk to Scott Baird coming up next, the elite NBC Bay Area insider for the Raiders. He's got a lot to say on what this team looks like heading into camp. I'm live from camp Thursday and Friday in Napa. Napa and Gruden is back to have his first camp as the head coach with a completely different roster. Scott Baird on who's new to this roster and what the Raiders could look like on the field quickly in a matter of 1 month. This is Fox.
Well, there's a lot of people that look at Pro Football Focused, and they think Pro Football Focus knows that, hey, that's a drop. Maybe that wasn't a drop. Maybe that was some guy's opinion at Pro Football Focus.
I love that. John Gruden talking about Pro Football Focus. I love Pro Football Focus. The way they break down all the stats that you would never think of breaking down in your life. I mean, even if you're really into fantasy, you'd look and you'd do a deep dive, but not like that. We'll talk to Coach Gruden either Thursday or Friday live from Napa at Raiders training camp. And a lot happening with the Silver and Black. We talked to Mike Pritchard about the AFC West. People wondering what the Raiders could do record-wise. I'm seeing a lot of 8-8s, 7-9s, 9-7s. I saw a 5-11, which I thought was a bit shocking. But there are predictions coming in. That's what analysts are supposed to do and paid to do. I'm paid to do that when we come out with our football preview show. Got to come up with wins and losses, but it gets dicey doing it this time of year. Most people look off of last year's record or what happened in the offseason in regards to win replacement the following year. Raiders were a 12-win team not too long ago, down to 6. How do they bounce that number up again? Scott Baer joins us, the great Raiders insider from NBC Sports Bay Area. And Scott, first off, it was a pretty emotional week in the Raider Nation. Greg Papa, my longtime friend, very good friend. They move on with the Raiders. Brett Musburger comes in. Ricky's had a big John Gruden party, appreciation party, and then Coach Sperano and the announcing of his passing. A lot happening in the Raider Nation this last week.
Yeah, and the one thing that the Raiders put out after Coach Sperano's passing was once a Raider, always a Raider. And that's definitely true for even those that have been disenfranchised from the team or those that even only played for one season. There's definitely a bond there. There were a lot of players that talked a lot about Tony. and that's obviously life and death. That's the most important thing. When it comes to the other stuff, when it comes to Greg Papa moving on, he spoke in the Bay Area today about kind of why that happened and how hard this year is going to be for him. He's been the radio voice for 21 years now, and like you said, you know him very well, working with him in the past, as good a guy in terms of play-by-play as there is in the business and lost in all this is Coach Tom Flores, who's been around for every single Super Bowl ring this franchise has ever had, was the color guy for a long time, stepping down from that. So, yes, there is a lot of changes outside of the football realm. So some somber moments. And obviously when John Gruden throws a party, he does it right. And it was rocking at Rookies on Friday.
I want to look at this team before I see you up in camp. I'll be up there broadcasting Thursday and Friday into the preseason. And I just wanted to get big picture from you in regards to Khalil Mack and the way it's being handled in the Bay Area and nationally, because he's such a good young kid. Everyone knows how dominant he is. I think he's one of the best players to come in at that position since Lawrence Taylor, since Von Miller. And how delicate of a situation has it been for you to cover?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting. And I think that Khalil Mack, I mean, you know him. And mm-hmm. for your listeners who don't know him, this kid isn't as good a shape as he would be if he took every offseason OTA rep in practice. That's just the way he goes about things. And football does come first for him. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Raiders fans should be worried that when he comes back, whether that's in 3 days or in 3 weeks, which is possible, that's where they're going here. But he hired an agent like Joel Siegel for a reason. He is good at what he does, at maximizing dollars, and that is the ultimate goal here. So for the player, and in terms of guarantees and things like that, I have a tough time not siding with football players who put on helmets and run into each other at 22 miles per hour for a living without fully guaranteed contracts. So this does make it an interesting situation. In the OTAs, it wasn't a big deal to me. I don't think it was a big deal to many. Even the coaches thought, hey, we have a plan for how to get this guy caught up. But the farther we go with the new training camp, the more time he misses in a brand-new scheme, that is complicating. I think having Aaron Donald also looking for maximum dollars is also complicating, as is one more factor. Speaking for defensive players as a whole, and something that's agent-driven and player-driven, that the quarterback numbers, right, are going up at a rapid rate. The defensive player numbers are not stagnant, but since Von Miller and J.J. Watt signed those deals, it's kind of hovered. It definitely hasn't increased like the signal callers. So I think for all those reasons, this is a complicated negotiation. I was on vacation last week, but the last time I checked, it was not close. I would not be surprised at all if you are broadcasting up there in Napa and Khalil Mack is not on the field in front of you.
Scott Baer is our guest. Scott, I'm interested in one big thing on defense. There's a lot of guys that you have to do a deep dive on, watch them closely, watch what they have to do to make the team. But it seems like John Gruden and Reggie especially brought in a lot of bodies on defense, at cornerback, at safety, guys who are going to be competing to the last day of the breakdown to name the 53-man roster. The fact that they have so much depth now, when it wasn't a strength in that defensive core, I get it. Do you like some of these players and their potential coming into camp?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that needed to be sorted out in training camp. I think especially in the secondary, you're looking at you've got more quality safeties than you do starting spots. You have a lot of cornerbacks and a lot of veterans on this team. Sharice Wright and Leon Hall, guys that either could have big roles or could not be on the 53-man. That's kind of where we are in this limbo period. Little piece of news, Bashaud Breeland visited the Raiders yesterday and today. He's going to take some time and make a couple more stops before he decides where he's going to go. Just so your listeners recall, he was a guy who signed a 3-year deal with Carolina only to suffer an injury on vacation and lose out on a failed physical. He's another quality guy that's out there. So this secondary is still being reshaped. This this wide receiver core with names that Raiders fans know, even from last year, Johnny Holton and Seth Roberts and guys like that, those roles are not guaranteed at this point. As a matter of fact, they are in serious jeopardy. So there is a lot of flux going on. And normally, I think even last year, you could write a starting lineup in pen, and you could write a lot of role players very harshly with a number two pencil. Now I think you need a big fat eraser and some whiteout on the other end, because there's going to be a lot of flux in this preseason as this new coaching staff, which has such long tenures ahead of them, really evaluates these players. None of them are on terribly long-term deals, and they try to find the best mix of guys, which ones pan out, which ones don't. On defense especially, that's going to be a big thing as we move through the summer.
Hey, last one. Together, we've seen a lot of coaches recently come and gone, even Jack Del Rio, who got paid on the way out, and everybody wishes him well. Isn't a big part of this preseason going to be the coaches and watching new coaches get after the same players, many who were on this roster last year and had relationships with coaches who are no longer here? How chippy and how edgy do you expect training camp to be?
Yeah, I think it's going to ratchet up, because so far, without pads and things like that, John Gruden has been very aggressive from the mental side of things when it comes to pop quizzes and how fast these guys are absorbing the scheme and how they can adjust to all these audibles and new age offensive techniques that are going to be a part of the Raiders scheme that, frankly, John Gruden is going to unveil throughout the course of the autumn. But in camp, I do think it's going to get aggressive. That's what he wants. I wouldn't be surprised if the third team went live a little bit, as older guys who are just signed are trying to prove themselves, or guys who are on older contracts, like what you were saying, guys without guaranteed money, afraid of them or in front of them, are really trying to fight, scratch, and claw for jobs. I mean, you look at this. They drafted Brandon Parker, and they drafted Colton Miller. So Donald Penn scratching for every snap, and I think that's what's going to make training camp engaging. That's what it's going to make it fun for fans who go up there, because we know about this collection of talent. We don't know which guys are going to be cream that rise to the top.
Thank you, Scott. I'll see you this weekend. Thank you.
Thanks, JT.
Scott Baer, a really good insider. He's got to have great information, and a guy that we'll have on throughout the course of the season who will break news or be the first or second guy to know when something big goes down. One of the things, and there's a lot of football coaches who are out there and people who listen who are in football, maybe played the game, just had Mike Pritchard on from here. Preseason is getting weaker and weaker since I've been around the Raiders for 20 years. You don't want to win desperately, obviously, in the preseason. You just want to remain healthy. But when there's a new coach and a brand new scheme, your players have to play fast and aggressive in the little burst that they're going to get in the preseason if they have any chance on wanting to win in the regular season a month after that. You got to start fast in the NFL. In an era of Tom Brady and the Patriots, how deep the AFC West has been on and off. Look at the NFC West. You got to start off quickly. For the Raiders to start off quickly, they have to play the Rams on Monday night and at Denver. I mean, that is not easy. Denver and the Raiders are a hardcore rivalry, and the Rams are favored going into Oakland. And they look to be the better team coming into this year, unless Gruden can start them fast and get them going. But how do you start a team fast going into Monday Night Football Week 1 if you don't let Carr and Jordy Nelson really get to work in the preseason and run routes and do it in game-time elements? So I'm looking forward to seeing what that looks like. Thursday practices, the rookies are up there. The vets get in Wednesday practices throughout the weekend. I'll be there, and I'll report back on Monday. The quick start to the Raiders and what John Gruden's mojo's like right out of the gate. A very vocal guy, high-energy guy, and we love that about him. Hey, happy hour's right here. Less than 15 minutes, PTs, 5 to 7. and then the one at night, midnight to 2 a.m. Tremendous service, tremendous sports. And how about the excitement for what's coming with the fantasy football drafts, their draft kits, and the way they're going to put on these big events? We'll tell you more about that in the weeks to come. We'll wrap it up next and bring Looney in. This is Fox.
I don't think it's a big deal at all. It actually would be a bigger issue if he was trying to hide it. But, you know, when you sign up for an endorsement or you hire somebody to endorse your product, you have a sense of their personality and you know what you're getting. And if he's true to himself and he's being out in the open, I don't see it as being a problem at all.
Yeah, Mark Cuban, no problem with Jimmy G. That's your franchise quarterback of the Niner Empire going forward. Walking in Beverly Hills to a restaurant with a porn star. It wasn't that big of a story. I thought it was going to be bigger because TMZ makes everything big. And TMZ had it up there for days, and it got a ton of traffic. Every week on The Night Show, I have Evan Rosenblum, the executive producer at TMZ, and he talks about some of the traffic numbers. That was a big deal, but not a big deal in San Francisco. 49er ownership didn't say a word about it. And their fans are all in on Jimmy G. Because of the success of Steve Young and Joe Montana and where this franchise used to be, they really think in San Francisco that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to lead them not back to the playoffs but to greatness in years to come. We'll see. I often compare him to Carr. They're in the same market. Carr and Jimmy G are in the same market. I like Carr's upside more than Jimmy G. I think he's more athletic. He can do big things. They both have big arms. But the record will stand. Whoever takes their team to the playoffs maybe wins the Super Bowl. It's going to be fun to watch that rivalry for a few more years in Oakland in the Bay Area before the Raiders head out to Vegas. A couple other quick things before we get going. Good show tonight. We're fired up because, you know, coming off the weekend was incredible. What we could have had with Tiger Woods is something that we have to stop and look back on momentarily. Tiger Woods had a chance to win a major. And it would have cleaned me up in regards to golf predictions. I would have been a made man the rest of my life. Not a statue, but I'm one of the guys on the radio still, non-knucklehead, who believes that Tiger, ready, will win multiple majors before it's done. He's got 14. He had the lead on Sunday at the Open this past weekend. He could have won that. I think he's going to catch a British Open or a Masters in the next 2 years, and then one more on the very back end. But I thought that Tiger would win, and he had a chance to do it Sunday. That getting away hurts him because I don't know how often he's going to get that close. Shouldn't get that close at the U.S. Open. PGA, depending on where the track is, it could be really tough for him to win on a course that's longer and longer. And the fact that Tiger used 3-iron on two back-to-back holes where he had the lead going in and lost the tournament, shocking. Never thought that would happen. Especially at an open championship where you can bomb it over the bunkers. Tiger decided not to do that. One other thing, real important too, that we got to mention coming up here. You look at everything that's happening here in the Valley. I watched a lot of boxing this weekend. It was a great card at the Hard Rock I'm going to be talking about. We're on countdown to Canelo Triple G. It's lining up in my phone bank, the insiders that we're going to have on, everybody who wants to talk about boxing, and what could be, maybe, and there's a lot of good fights lined up, potentially. Deontay Wilder, Anthony Joshua. But we're going to get Triple G and Canelo in our backyard. And I hope it's going to be big. Because the promotion hasn't been big out of the gate. But they're expecting a lot of people from here on out to run to this fight. Thanks to Bobby. Thanks to Seth Everett. Scott Baer, who joined us. And Michael Pritchard. Really appreciate Pritch and talking to him again. Looney joins me right here at the top of the hour. We'll get into that. On Tiger and what happened on the back nine of the Ocean Open Championship. And Coach Sperano, the ex-Raider head coach, been in the league his entire adult life. Rest in peace, Coach. Hell of a guy. A tremendous leader of men.